This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am Tim Murray. You can always follow me on Twitter at one Tim Murray. 3 for 3. Hopefully we can continue our promise of having a new episode in your feed each and every week throughout this summer. We're ramping up. We're getting kickoff times for early week games. We're getting kickoff times and date changes for late season games. We'll get into some of the nerdery that I find fascinating, but maybe not everybody finds necessarily fascinating. What I think people on this betting podcast will find fascinating is Bill Conley from ESPN, his S&P Plus updated odds for this upcoming year, production coming back, who is a team we should back, who should we fade, and a fascinating discussion regarding Florida, a team that's schedule, as Brad Powers said last week on the podcast, is one of the hardest schedules he has ever seen. So very much looking forward to my conversation with Bill Conley, which will be coming up in just a matter of moments. Stick around for the end of the podcast. So I was flying home from Indianapolis, visiting some family over the weekend, and I was able to grab a preview magazine. Yes, it is preview magazine season, and I grabbed Lindy's, and I'm working my way through every single conference. And at the end of the podcast, I have already circled a couple of situational spots. You know me, I love my situational spots. I do it every week on VSiN Primetime, where I take a look at some letdown spots, some look ahead spots. But I was just thumbing through a couple of teams in the American Athletic Conference. I'm like, whoa, those are some interesting spots. No lines yet, but you know, it's a good time to get the gears going and see if anyone else does the same thing. But I'm working my way through schedules, looking for unique spots to take a look at. A couple of fun little nuggets that I want to pass along before I give you one piece of information that the gears got going a little bit. Coming off of last week's podcast with Brad Powers. But I don't know if anyone is interested in this, but how about this? Oklahoma and Texas, the Red River rivalry, now as SEC members. So remember, this game has been on Fox for years. Last year, Oklahoma beat Texas. This game is always played at the Cotton Bowl there, State Fair in Dallas. This game will now be at 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern. So a little bit of a tweak to the normal schedule. I know some people wondering what Big Noon kickoff will be on opening weekend. You know, we've had some massive ones announced already, whether it was Texas visiting Michigan is certainly a huge game that'll be part of the Big Noon kickoff. Alabama heading up to Wisconsin. I believe that's in week 3. We'll have Penn State of West Virginia, which I predicted would happen, and that'll be going up against that triple header opening weekend. So August 31st, your noon slate looks like Penn State at West Virginia, Clemson, Georgia, Fox, and ABC. ABC's got the loaded triple header on that Labor Day weekend, where it goes from Clemson, Georgia, and Atlanta, Miami at Florida, and then Notre Dame at Texas A&M. Miami, Florida, and Notre Dame, Texas A&M both under a field goal point spread right now, with the road team being the favorite in the Miami-Florida game, and then Texas A&M, as of right now, a one-point favorite against Notre Dame. Clemson, Georgia, that is a two-touchdown spread at DraftKings Sportsbook. Another just note from that I thought as a college football nerd that this was kind of interesting, that the Egg Bowl, which is Mississippi and Mississippi State, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, is now shifting off of Thanksgiving. It had used to gone head-to-head on Thanksgiving with the NFL. ESPN has said, you know what, let's move this off. Let's give it a better time slot. So it's going to be 3:30 Eastern on ABC. And then last year, I believe it was last year, maybe it was 2 years ago. 2 years ago was Florida State on Black Friday night. I thought that was an awesome game 2 years ago. Last year was back on Saturday. Looks like they're going to do Georgia Tech on Black Friday and primetime on ABC, which is kind of hasn't really got the gears going since Georgia just absolutely pummels them every single year. So Bill Conley going to come up here in just a moment. But one thing I wanted to circle back on real quickly regarding Brad Powers' visit was his interest in a couple of conference futures. So I want to hone in on NC State. And I feel like every year NC State gets a little too much love. Sorry, Will Brinson. But this year, I'm kind of fascinated, is NC State this year's Louisville? What I mean by that is last year, Louisville, we looked at the schedule and we said, whoa, if Louisville can work their way through this schedule, they're going to have a chance to be in the ACC championship. Now, I did not end up getting to the window on a Louisville future, which you certainly could have hedged off of. I felt like I missed a good number. But Louisville last year, they had a Thursday night game against NC State. It was an ugly game. They were able to get that win. Didn't cover. They lost to Pittsburgh after beating Notre Dame. And then they were able to run the table in the ACC. They beat Duke. They beat Virginia Tech. They beat Virginia. And then they won on the road at Miami. So Louisville, when you looked at the schedule, there was no Clemson. There was no Florida State. There was no North Carolina, who had Drake May and thought maybe they would be good. They ended up not being. And NC State, to me, is kind of the interesting one, where last year, the Brennan Armstrong experience was pretty much disastrous. However, you look at NC State, and they finished the season relatively strong, right? They ended up losing in their bowl game to Kansas State, but they finished top 25. They won their last five games. They got off to a slow start, lost to Louisville, lost to Duke. They made the tweak at quarterback, ultimately going to MJ Morris, and that gave them that kind of a shot in the arm. Now they bring in Grayson McCall, who obviously is a grizzled vet who will be at the quarterback position. So there's a lot more excitement there regarding the quarterback position than Brennan Armstrong. They go out to get Jordan Waters, a very nice piece to bring into that running back room. And they went out and got Noah Rogers, a transfer from Ohio State. And I think the biggest one was the return of Kevin Concepcion, who was an absolute baller as a freshman. Now, they lose Peyton Wilson, who was the heart and soul of that defense. But I look at the schedule from an ACC standpoint. They open up ACC play on the road at Clemson. They are right now at DraftKings, an 8.5-point underdog in that game. So, not ideal start. Then, it's Wake Forest, Syracuse, both at home. You're at Cal, home to Stanford, home to Duke, and at Georgia Tech and UNC. So you're avoiding some of the best teams in this conference. You're avoiding Florida State. You're avoiding Louisville. So you're avoiding Miami, who's gotten a lot of, you know, a lot of hype here in the preseason. You're avoiding Virginia Tech. You're avoiding the majority of the best teams in this conference outside of Clemson, which will be a challenge. But if Dave Doran's squad, with a very good defensive coordinator, Tony Gibson, as Brad Powers alluded to last week, and Robert and I entering year two as their offensive coordinator with a quarterback that you would think will fit that system maybe a little bit better than Brennan Armstrong, even though, yes, I know Brennan Armstrong and Robert and I had their success at UVA a couple years back. I think NC State is very intriguing. Now, I haven't gotten to the window yet on their 7-1 to win the ACC. Do I think they're the best team in the ACC? Absolutely not. However, we get to the ACC championship with a 7-1 ticket in our pocket, we're feeling pretty good. So NC State, after talking to Brad last week here on the podcast, was one that really got the gears going. He also talked about Oklahoma State at 12-1, which we'll talk about with Bill Conley coming up shortly, because Oklahoma State brings back a ton of production from just a year ago. So one team to kind of keep in your eyes from a schedule standpoint, once again, for NC State. They do have a non-conference game against Tennessee. Right now, they're a 5.5-point neutral site underdog against Tennessee on September 7th. That'll be prime time on ABC. But man, you look at that schedule, they play some of the doldrums of the ACC this year. They avoid Miami. They avoid Florida State. They avoid Virginia Tech. They avoid a plucky SMU team that I think will be tricky for some there in year number one. So if they can somehow get by Clemson, they also avoid Louisville. NC State could be an interesting one to keep an eye on, who has never made the ACC championship in school history. But hey, maybe after their magical run with DJ Burns and company to the Final Four, maybe 2024 is the year of the Wolfpack, and put up that stupid hand signal, whatever that is, the go pack go there. But NC State, very intriguing. That was for you, Will Brinson. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, Bill Conley from ESPN will jump on, talk about his updated S&P Plus for the 2024 season, production coming back, production not coming back, what we should do with those particular teams. So we'll hit on that with Bill Conley on the other side. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And as promised, Bill Conley from ESPN joins us right now on the podcast. Follow him on Twitter at ESPN underscore Bill C, the man, the myth, the legend behind S&P Plus. And we will get into returning production, production out the window. What does that mean for win totals and all of that? But Bill, appreciate you jumping on. And I want to jump right into a question I got from a listener regarding, you know, S&P Plus and how challenging it is. Hempe Farmer asked, how challenging has it been to keep up with roster turnover when updating S&P Plus?
Yeah, I mean, it's the roster update process that I always go through each kind of winter and spring as I'm prepping for previews and everything. It's definitely a lot more involved. I would say back, you know, 5, 6, 8 years ago when I was doing this, it would probably take me, I don't know, 20 to 30 minutes per team to kind of get the roster updated and figure out who left and all that kind of stuff. And now, I mean, depending on the team and depending on how many transfers you took in, it's at least double that on average, probably. It does take a little while. Now, I mean, on the flip side of that, I don't write previews in February anymore like I used to, because there's no point in doing any of that until the April transfer window has passed. So I have more time. And now we're into the kind of the preview writing process, but it's still, yeah, it's very different. I think it was really encouraging to see these last couple of years. I think the projections themselves that come from all this work are pretty good. You know, it's, you know, obviously when a team's taking on 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever transfers, it is going to be kind of a strange deal. And the variance, I guess you could say, of potential outcomes is very broad in that regard, but it fared well. Like it SP Plus as a number did well in 2023. And I have no reason to think that'll be different in 24.
Now, I know a lot of my listeners certainly, from a betting standpoint, utilize S&P Plus as a tool. You have your spreadsheet that I check out every week, and just you know, as a piece of the tool belt. But when it comes to the origination of S&P Plus, I guess give the folks a little bit of a background of how it all came together, and at what point for you did it kind of become a betting tool or something that you can compare your number to the Vegas number?
Yeah. I mean, this started back in 2007. I ran a Missouri blog and was facing a really, you know, dire off season from a content perspective. So I'm like, let's fiddle around with stats. What stats exist out there? And the answer was nothing, really. You know, from an advanced stat standpoint, anyway. I always say I loved baseball stats but hated baseball, and so I tried to just take some of the ideas from baseball on base percentage as kind of an efficiency measure, an OPS, and that kind of stuff, and figure out how to translate that into football in some way. And so S&P, before I had to get rid of the ampersand for cease and desist related reasons, it's basically success rate was the S. That was supposed to be the on base percentage. And then points per play was the P. That was my first stab at an explosiveness measure, kind of created an expected points kind of model. Many of those exist now. And I was just trying to measure efficiency and explosiveness in a way that would help. And I think all my first stabs at, you know, opponent adjustments were pretty terrible. It's really, really hard in college football because of just the enormous array of quality, the diversity of quality, we'll say, in college football. But I think, you know, starting in probably 2013 or so, I think I made some adjustments that made it a pretty decent measure. And at that point, you know, I could compare my number to the Vegas, to the line. It would do pretty well. It was, from a game to game error standpoint, it still wasn't very good. But the lines weren't very good either. And 10 years later, I think SP Plus is way better as a number, but the lines are absurdly good. The starting lines in college football are so much better than they were even 5 years ago. So I think it's a completely different deal. Like if you hit 50%, if you're projecting every single game and you hit 50%, you did a really good job. And so it's a completely different environment than it used to be.
Yeah. Before we jump into, you know, this year and your numbers and maybe some futures and I found it interesting comparing the success of your top four returning production teams from a year ago and how they did, against their win totals. So we'll get to all of that. But when you see your number is, let's say, a touchdown off from the Vegas odds, how do you conceptualize that? Is that, all right, immediately trust in my numbers? Or do you take a step back sometimes and say, why am I so far off from where the market might be on a particular game?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's that far off, there's probably an injury or suspension involved.
Sure.
At least once we've gotten through, you know, the first part of the season, maybe you'll find some numbers that, you know, just my preseason projections were particularly good or bad on a given team. And that's why there's disagreement. And they'll kind of the line and SP Pulse will kind of drift towards each other after a while. But if it's November and there's a 7, 8, 9 point difference, there's almost certainly an injury related reason. So if you're going to succeed at all in this universe, in the betting universe, you're going to have to be able to adjust pretty well for injuries or suspensions or opt-outs or whatever we're talking about. And SP Plus, by the way, I'm never going to expect to do well in bowl season ever again, for that specific reason. SP Plus is a good starting point, towards success, I hope. But yeah, you're going to have to make adjustments on your own and figure out, because there are just so many personnel related reasons for disagreement in that regard. So,
And it's so interesting, Bill, because I don't make my own numbers. I try to kind of put everyone, you know, in a big pot and then, you know, make my own decisions. Right. And that's, I think, what you have to do as a bettor. Yep. But I am a big situational guy. I think situations, especially in college, are massive. You talk about bowl season. I think bowl season, if you can read the room and understand, hey, Miami's going to New York, they probably don't want to be there, let's fade them in the Pinstripe Bowl. So for you, as someone who's very numerically based, and I know you put out a column each week on ESPN.com during the season, do you sometimes go against your number and just say, you know, situationally, this might not be a great spot, right? You know, I think to Notre Dame, Louisville just a year ago, where Notre Dame, I think, been run through the ringer. Louisville was kind of fresh as a daisy there. Big spot, prime time, and Louisville beat them up pretty good. So how do you incorporate, if at all, situational spots into your numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I think basically, you know, in each of the Friday columns, I'll have my little best bets chunk. And for that, you're basically looking for all the ones where your pick and SP Plus agree is basically what I look for. If I disagree, you know, it's still probably, if I were to pick every single game against the spread, I think SP Plus would still perform better overall. And so you're just looking for kind of alignment in that regard for those picks. But yeah, no, I mean, there are plenty of games where I see what the projection is and I'm just like, no, that's projecting a team that doesn't exist this week. And again, especially during bowls. And so you do, again, it's all about using that as a starting point and then adjusting off of that. But yeah, I mean, there are plenty of times when you're going to disagree with your numbers just because you know it's projecting a team that doesn't exist for a specific game.
As I look at your post-spring SP Plus rankings, and I heard you talking about this recently on the College Game Day podcast, I think you came away pretty satisfied because a lot of the way too early top 25. It doesn't seem like, Bill, there's a lot of outliers here. I'm looking at the top 25, you know, nothing really jumps at me what is Northern Illinois doing at number 11? So were you, when you saw the outcome of your top 25, and for those who haven't read it, go check the article out and I'll tweet out a link, but it's Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, 1, 2, 3, and then Texas. And that's what the odds are as well. Yeah. So did you come away pretty satisfied with, you know, overall, at least the top 15, top 20 of these of the SP Plus post spring?
Yeah, I mean, like I said on the Game Day Pod, I enjoy disagreement. I like coming up with some random outliers that that don't quite fit the conventional wisdom. But in this case, yeah, it does seem like, and I think we've seen that in recent years. I think the quote unquote conventional wisdom's a lot better than it used to be. We don't overreact to bowl performances quite as much, which we really can't. Because we understand how much of an outlier bowl performance is sometimes. In general, but yeah, I when you look at that, you don't see too much to disagree with overall. I think some people, are going to be kind of curious about Penn State being in the top 10, even though they're always in the top 10. They're just not in the top five. That's kind of Penn State's thing, I guess. And LSU is a lot higher, I think, in SP Plus than some people have them. Than I personally would have them, because ranking them ninth overall, when their offense is almost certainly going to regress, means their defense actually has to show up. And maybe it does, but it's hard to just automatically assume that. So yeah, that was one that there was a little bit of that stood out a little bit. And of course, at 5 and 6, having Alabama and Michigan right next to each other, those are enormous mysteries. You know, Michigan, because of the turnover on offense, and of course, just the turnover on the coaching staff, and Alabama, of course, you know, you're kind of sort of replacing the best college football coach of all time. And who knows how that's going to go. So it's hard to look at that list and see too much. I do feel like Utah is kind of, people seem to be coalescing toward them as the favorite in the Big 12, which I kind of get. And this, you know, the SP Plus rankings are kind of a reminder that they could be stuck in a log jam with Kansas State and Oklahoma State and lots of other teams. But yeah, you know, if Utah's the biggest disagreement, then you're probably doing okay, because the top five looks like the top five.
So I'm glad you brought up Utah, because your rankings have Utah sitting at 18, Kansas State at 17, Oklahoma State at 21, and then Arizona at 24, new member of the Big 12. And, you know, last week on the podcast, we were talking about some of the futures numbers out there for the Big 12 at DraftKings. And I looked at it, and it seemed a bit off to me in this regard, where Utah and Kansas State, Bill, are the favorites. That's not off. I think that's very fair to look at, you know, with Cam Rising coming back from injury and Kyle Whittingham's success, and then Kansas State, I think there's a lot of juice there for them. But then Oklahoma State sitting at 12. This is a team, or 12-1, excuse me. This is a team that brings back a lot of production. We're going to get to that. Their schedule is not, you know, impossible by any stretch of the imagination. They go to Kansas State and they play Utah both in September, but then after that, it seems relatively manageable. Was that one that jumped out to you? I don't know how much you looked at the futures board, but Oklahoma State at 12-1, Bill, that has me intrigued, obviously, because if we get them to the championship game like they did last year, then you got an hedge opportunity and all of that. So in a conference that seems completely wide open and the odds would indicate that, it feels like Oklahoma State at 12-1 is an intriguing look.
Yeah, I think their schedule is a little harder than the other top teams in the Big 12. And I'm just looking quickly at my projected conference wins, and it's, you know, 7.5 for Utah. They have the most favorable schedule of any of those top teams. Then 6.9 for K-State and 6.0 for Oklahoma State. So that does tell you that it is a pretty hard slate compared to those other teams. But it is a really, I mean, they're third, I think, in returning production right now. Yep. They're right there next to Iowa State, another Big 12 team, and Stanford, I believe. And Oklahoma State's a funny team. We've gotten used to how Mike Gundy works to a certain degree when it comes to, you know, sometimes they head into the season not knowing what they have, and September is an absolute slog, and then they figure out, okay, I guess we're a power running team this year, and then suddenly they're a completely different team in August or October and November. This year, they're going to hit the ground running to a certain degree. They know what they are. Alan Bowman's back. Ollie Gordon II, of course, is back. Their best receivers are back. All their linemen are back. This is a team that, you know, they know what they're good at and what they're not good at. They're extremely experienced. And so you look at that schedule, yeah, it's harder than the other contenders, but if they hit the ground running better than Utah or Kansas State do, they, you know, if they start 2-0 in conference play heading into October, they're they're immediately the conference favorites at that point. So that is a really intriguing situation for them to be in. It's, you know, who knows what the ceiling is, but when you're that experienced, you're probably going to reach that ceiling pretty quickly, whatever it is. Maybe that at the very least gives them an edge against Kansas State with, you know, which still could be breaking in a new offense, new quarterback, all that other stuff. Maybe it takes them a little while longer to find fifth gear. Oklahoma State should start pretty close to fifth gear.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, from a scheduling standpoint, as people look into these futures, getting Kansas State, even though it'll be at the Little Apple September 28th, could be advantageous. I want to get to schedules because when you're betting into the futures market or betting win totals, obviously schedules are massive. And you pointed out the Florida schedule and Billy Napier in the laugh is, you know, brings it all home. And we had Brad Powers on last week and he said, you know, he's not into hot takes, but this might be the hardest schedule ever in college football. Just when you think about, you start the year against Miami. You also have UCF in the non-con, which is going to be a solid Big 12 team with a ton of transfers. And then the month of November is an absolute just murderer's row. So, Bill, Circa has the win total at 5. DraftKings has it at 4.5. And I thought your number was pretty fascinating when you ran the projections of how likely it is for Florida to get the bowl eligibility, which would mean exceeding 5 wins and getting to 6.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And that's a, you know, 4.5 to 5. Like right now, the average projected wins with SP Plus are 4.7. So they're right. Yeah. Those are very good numbers. What I ran and what I mentioned in the article was that, you know, an average top 5 team would be projected to win 9 games on average against their schedule. And you listed it. I mean, not even including UCF, who's kind of a wild card there, and a September trip to Starkville, which I don't think they're going to be very good, but it's a very new team, and who knows? Yeah, they played 19-13 in the first 3 weeks of the season. They play 16 Tennessee in the middle of October. And then, like you said, in November, they play number 1, 4, 9, 8, and 12. that's crazy. And if Billy Napier, like, I don't know where the bar is for, you know, obviously he starts the season on the hot seat, but if he gets them to 6-6 or 7-5, that means they were a top 20 level team. And I think with, you know, maybe you should expect more than that. Maybe you should expect more than the last 2 years when they were 31st and 41st in SP Plus, but that's extreme. If they get to a bowl, they improved significantly. And I would think that would buy him another year, but we'll see where the bar is set. It's the right now, what did I have their bowl odds at? Like
27%, I think.
And they're a borderline top 30 team, and they've got a less than 1-3 shot of getting to 6-6. That's pretty wild.
So on the flip side, you got a hard schedule, a brutal schedule for Florida. And then you pointed out, well, a team like Syracuse, you know, year one of Fran Brown, who is kind of an interesting hire, guy with ties to that area, big time recruiter. We've seen how busy Syracuse has been from a recruiting standpoint, both in the portal and, you know, high school wise. And then you look at their schedule and there's no Florida State. Miami, they get at home to close out the year. They get Virginia Tech, who's, you know, up and coming. They get them at home. No Clemson. So when you look at Syracuse's schedule, where do you have them in your S&P Plus? And where do you have their schedule? Because their win total is around 7 at most shops.
Yeah, that might be a little aggressive, but they have by far the easiest schedule in the ACC. You know, that is a wild range there of strengths of schedule within that conference. You've got Georgia Tech at 15th. You've got Clemson and Florida State, both kind of borderline top 30 in terms of schedule strength. Stanford, too. And then you've got Syracuse at 90th. Virginia Tech's at 82nd, which that's good timing for them in that regard. With what they return. But yeah, I think, you know, even with a number 90 schedule, you know, they're projected 64th overall in SP Plus. That gives them about 6 to 6.5 wins. So 7 still seems a little bit aggressive to me. You know, Kyle McCord, it is funny. I mean, he was still like top 20, top 10 in total QBR. We all decided he was the worst quarterback in the history of the planet. And by Ohio State standards, clearly he was a obvious downgrade. But he's still good, and he's probably, you would think, better than Garrett Schrader, or at least as good. Their running back on a per carry basis, Allen wasn't very good, but he was carrying a big load. And with a shaky passing game, Aronda Gadsden's back, you could certainly talk yourself into them being solid. And if they are, you know, I have them projected 64th, but if they're just kind of a top 50 team, then they're probably starting 4-0 at the very least, probably 5-0. They might get to 7 wins by the Boston College trip in early November. So it's, you can certainly talk yourself into that. The Fran Brown type hires are really tricky because I like track records, and the guys who weren't even, you know, a coordinator, it's so hard to know what they bring to the table. You can't really read tea leaves and get anything from it. So we'll see, but it's certainly, yeah, if you think they've got top 50 potential, if you think Gadsden and McCord and guys like that are able to make them a little better than projected. He brought in what, like 4 transfer offensive linemen. The variance there is pretty big, but you can talk yourself into 7, I think.
You know, I opened the show talking about NC State, and they've certainly had some years where they have preseason hype and they don't necessarily come through. Dave Doran kind of lives in that 8-9 win lane. I look at their schedule, and then you mentioned Virginia Tech. So those two teams I find interesting. When you look at them from a returning production standpoint, what they did in the portal, NC State's win totals around 8.5, Virginia Tech's at 8, NC State's 7-1 to win the conference, Virginia Tech 14-1. Either one of those teams, Bill, based off of the schedule, based off of what they bring back, both of these teams had some momentum. I felt like NC State won, I think, their last 5 games before losing the bowl game to Kansas State. Virginia Tech, you know, crushed Tulane in their bowl game. But as you alluded to, it's hard to kind of put into. Willie Fritz, I believe, had left at that point.
Yeah.
Michael Pratt wasn't there. So it was a shell.
It was like a downpour, too.
It was Annapolis, my old stomping grounds there. But Virginia Tech or NC State, those two teams I feel like are getting some buzz here. Either one of those teams intrigue you in 2024?
Yeah, they're right next to each other in the projections. 29th for NC State, 32nd for Virginia Tech. Tech is like number 4 in returning production.
Yep.
So basically, you never really know how to read late season improvement. Like that could be kind of just a glitch, and it could be meaningful, but it felt pretty meaningful for Virginia Tech. Like I think they are a candidate to exceed those projections a decent amount, simply because the reasons for their improvement. And they were, let's see, after 6 weeks last year, they were 76th in SP Plus. They ended up 46th. Hmm. So they exceeded projections pretty dramatically in 5 of the last 7 games, not against Louisville, not against NC State, but against everybody else. And you really saw with drones taking over the offense, with them being able to craft the offense around a good run game with both drones and Tootin also, you know, figured things out halfway through the year. He was an FCS transfer, so it took him a little while. You can absolutely talk yourself into Virginia Tech. They're at 8.4 projected wins. So they're already higher than the number. And if there's any sort of, you know, artificial, if they should be maybe projected a little higher because of the way they finished the year, then yeah, they're a good candidate for 9 or 10 wins. I think they're projected underdogs in only 2 games, at Miami and at home against Clemson. Only slight favorites in a couple of others, but sure, they are in very good position there. I think NC State's tricky because physically they're always really, 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 really impressive. You know, their strength and conditioning is obviously one of the better strength and conditioning programs out there, and they are able to turn 3-star guys into 4-star looking guys. And they've been really good at defense for a while now. But losing Peyton Wilson, losing a couple of really good DBs, they're experienced on defense. I think the fact that Doran brought in like 6 defensive back transfers has me spooked a little bit.
Yeah.
Like maybe he knows what he lost in Robert Kennedy and Shaheem Battle. But I do think, you know, it's you kind of give the benefit of the doubt to the defense. Where I'm struggling is I don't give the benefit of the doubt to the offense at all. They've been 98th and 73rd in offensive SP Plus the last 2 years. Grayson McCall is kind of, he hasn't been healthy, I guess, the last couple of years. He really seems to, you know, he was carrying himself like a 35-year-old veteran last year. And so if that was all health and he's good now and he's dropped some pounds out here, maybe maybe he's Grayson McCall of 2020 and 2021 again, and he commands a pretty good offense because they got Jordan Waters from Duke at running back. He's pretty good. I struggle to trust that offense still. I need to see it thriving, I guess. Because last year it was basically if Kevin Concepcion didn't make a big play, they didn't make any plays on offense.
Right.
And so they were all or nothing there. Their schedule's a little harder, I think, than Virginia Tech's. And the win total I've got projected is 8.5. So right at the line, right at the number. So I don't necessarily see value there, but I just haven't decided what I think of NC State as a whole. Virginia Tech, I think, is in a very good place to overachieve that 14-1. But NC State at 7-1 feels a little aggressive to me.
Yeah. And I was, what I opened the show with was you thought back to Louisville, what they were bringing in a year ago, how their schedule set up. I think they were in that double digit range for a futures. Before I get to just returning production and loss production, and we'll wrap on that, were there any, in, based off of your numbers, big outliers from a win total perspective that you saw?
Unfortunately, since I just finished the numbers recently, I haven't gotten all the way. I haven't dived into the numbers very well yet, but let me do a terrible podcast thing and pull up the the win totals as we speak, so I know what I'm talking about. As far as the national title goes, like you mentioned, we are starting off with Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, Alabama in the futures. I do think, you know, when you look at those kind of that secondary contenders list, you know, having Notre Dame at plus 2200 is kind of interesting, although I guess that makes them eighth overall, which is about right. Michigan, I'm just ignoring entirely because I don't know what to think about Michigan. But, you know, if you look at maybe let's say Texas A&M at plus 4,000, mm-hmm. That's kind of an interesting spot to be in because they're either going to be much better or much worse than their projections. Their schedule is still really hard, but it's not quite as hard now that they're not in a West division anymore. And the schedule strength has been distributed a little bit. They lost a ton of close games last year, and I think they're projected at 8.4 wins, but I think it wouldn't take much for them to end up at 10 wins and a playoff spot. And at that point, plus, if you're a potential playoff team and you're plus 4,000, that's a pretty good place to be, I think. So we can go down the list. You can find some value, but yeah, right offhand with the big teams, especially, it is hard to find value because I just the number and the market seem to agree, or my number and the market seem to agree quite a bit overall.
Yeah, what's going to be interesting too is when you think about now the expanded playoff and how is the playoff going to you know, give love to the SEC, to the Big Ten for their strength of schedules, right? And you would think and we talked about it last week where, you know, if you want to get into the weeds a little bit, Liberty, their schedule's an absolute joke.
Yeah.
And they got blown out in the New Year's Six last year, but they seem like they'll have the path to get there because Boise State plays Oregon and the Mountain West is better than, you know, the CUSA. But all right, we'll wrap on this because I thought this was interesting. So top four teams in returning production, you pointed out a year ago, went from 35-18 to 48-7. That was Kansas, Missouri, Florida State, and Michigan. Michigan, of course, winning the national championship. So this year, the top four teams you have in returning production is Iowa State, Stanford, Oklahoma State, and Virginia Tech. Iowa State went 7-6 last year with a bowl loss. Their win total 7.5. Stanford went 3-9. Their win total's 3.5. Oklahoma State, who we talked about already, 10-4 just a year ago, a bowl win, lost in the Big 12 championship. Their win total 7.5. And then Virginia Tech with that bowl win against Tulane, their win total is at 8. So you're getting, you know, priced in a little bit, right, because of the returning production. But of those four teams, is there any one in particular, Bill, that you expect a decent jump from? Or is it just what we just talked about in Virginia Tech?
Yeah, I think Virginia Tech's probably the most likely. What did you say Iowa State's number was? 7.5?
7.5, yeah.
Yeah, SP Plus has 7.5 wins on average. So that's it really was a lot more fun when the numbers weren't very good, especially the win totals. You could always find value with the win totals, and it's just harder now. I do think Iowa State's really, really interesting to me because they the last 2 years, like, they haven't won a close game in forever, it seems. Yeah. Like they beat Kansas State in that snowstorm, one of the most fun games of the year. But they, you know, they lost to Kansas by a touchdown. They lost to Ohio by three. They lost to Iowa by a touchdown. And the previous year, like, more than half their losses were by a touchdown or less. And so that kind of makes you think, you can never say, like, well, they've lost a ton of close games, so at some point they're going to win all their close games, because coaching and quarterback play and that kind of stuff does matter in those close situations. But they have been very unfortunate. And you look at a schedule now where early they've got a lot of probably likely wins. North Dakota, Arkansas State, Houston, Baylor, they're double-digit projected favorites in all those. Iowa's basically a toss-up. West Virginia's basically a toss-up. They're just like one break away or two breaks away from a 6-0 start. And at that point, back after the schedule doesn't look too bad, you can easily get to, like, if they can just beat either Iowa or West Virginia in the first half of the season, get to 5-1 heading into the home stretch, you're feeling pretty good about the, you know, topping 7.5 and maybe competing for a Big 12 title and going a long way. It's just, it's pretty conservative play calling as a whole. There, it just might not be total bad luck that they've lost all these close games. So that's where I'm at. I do think they are an absolute Big 12 contender, though. You know, maybe not to the level of Utah and Kansas State and Oklahoma State, but right there next to Kansas, next to maybe Arizona. Arizona has a lot of change, so I don't know what to think about them. But yeah, they're in a world with better win totals or worse win totals, they should have a win total of like 6, and we should be able to sneak up on everybody by saying they're going to win 7, 8, 9 games.
Well, and anytime Matt Campbell has expectations, you think back to 2019, and they fell flat on their face, right? I think they went 7-5, and they went to Orlando and got curb stomped by Notre Dame in the bowl game. So, but anytime they don't have expectations, it seems like they exceed it. Teams that are not returning production, this is where we get a little weird, which is what I like. So this is going to hurt me because I love Ken Niumatalolo, worked with him when I was on the Navy broadcast, but they bring back very little production from a changeover there at quarterback. They went 7-6 a year ago. So going back a step real quickly, you mentioned the lowest production a year ago, Kent State, UAB, ECU, East Carolina, and Stanford. They went from 23-37 to 10-38. Yeah. So this year, the four teams with the lowest production returning, San Jose State, 7-6 a year ago, Oregon State, which lost everything, 8-5 a year ago, UL Monroe, 2-10, and Air Force, 9-4. I don't have a win total on UL Monroe, but San Jose State is 5. Oregon State is so intriguing at 7.5, and then Air Force is sitting at 6.5. So looking at those three teams that are bringing back very little production, we saw teams, Kent State drop from 5-7 to 1-11, UAB 7-6 to 4-8, East Carolina 8-5 to 2-10 just a year ago. Stanford actually stayed the same, believe it or not, from the changeover in eras there. But any one of those teams seem destined for a disastrous season.
Yeah, Air Force, you figure, is still okay, because, I mean, number one, the service academies are used to turnover. That doesn't mean they always get it right or they're always good. They're still ups and downs. Look at Army recently. But Air Force, this is more turnover than they're used to, but they're still projected to win 6.5 games. They're still projected in the 90s in SP Plus. So that's just, you know, they were really good last year, so they'll fall, but it'll be kind of a soft landing, you think. San Jose State is the interesting one here, just because of turnover on the field. And then also, I mean, Kent Niumatalolo in a situation where he's not running the option. He said he's not running the option. He's being the CEO coach. He's such a good guy and a good dad figure. Like, I don't have a son. I only have a daughter, but, you know, the idea of your son playing for Kent Niumatalolo is very, very, very appealing. I've got them at 4.7 right now in terms of projected wins. And I do figure, with the change in offense and everything else, there it is a possibility for just a total reset. Even if things end up going pretty well there, I do figure this first year could be hard. They start a couple of, you know, starting with Sacramento State is actually going to tell us quite a bit, because Sac State isn't quite as good as they were 2 years ago when they had Troy Taylor, who's now at Stanford, but they're still solid. They're still probably a top 15 or so FCS team. And so that's, if we're going to see a total reset year, like that game right there is going to be a struggle. And if they don't win that one, they'll probably beat Kennesaw State in week three. They'll be favored against Nevada. But after that, like that might be it. They got a lot of toss-up games down the stretch where if they're not doing very well, it's easy to go against them in those games. So yeah, I got 4.7. I would say the range though is like 1-6. And it's easy to see them probably falling underneath that range a little bit. And I say that again as somebody who really likes Nia Matalolo. So that one's really interesting. Louisiana Monroe, like it's that's going to be a really, really tough spot. And Oregon State, you mentioned too. Like I've got them at 7.5 wins again. Like there's no value anywhere here, but they are. That's another team with such a massive amount of change that the variance there is really, really high. They could end up way above or more likely way below that number.
Yeah, and Oregon State and Washington State, I guess from a returning production standpoint, where do you have those two teams? Because they're really intriguing. You look at Oregon State, the buzz that they had last year, I would say for their standards or for their expectations, probably fell a little bit flat, you know, losing to Oregon and everybody leaves and they get crushed in the bowl game. Washington State, misses out on a bowl game. So those two teams, unique circumstance to say the least, we've never really seen this before. So what do you have of those two particular teams?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Oregon State's near the last in returning production, but Washington State's at 94th. Also projected, their schedule is soft enough that they're projected at 7.5 wins as well, 7.6. What's their number? What's Washington State's number?
7.5, excuse me.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So once again, no value whatsoever. but if you look at the flow of their schedule, it's kind of the opposite as other teams where they have a lot of losses early on. They'll beat Portland State, but then they've got Texas Tech at home. That's a toss up, maybe, or maybe it shades towards Texas Tech. Washington's most likely a loss. They'll probably beat San Jose, but then they get Baylor or Boise State and Fresno right out of the gate with their kind of pseudo Mountain West schedule. So they could easily be 2-4 and really, really struggling before their likely wins come. And so maybe that makes me lean a little bit under the 7.5 number. But at the same time, you know, the quarterback position is a little bit of a mystery, but I like their receiving core. They have, veteran lines for the most part. This is a soft enough schedule that, yes, I guess 7.5 feels about right to me, but I'd be more inclined to take the under, I think.
All right, two C teams before I let you out. Colorado, Clemson. Both have been hot topics this offseason. Clemson, a team that refuses to go to the portal, but still has been recruiting at a very high level. Their win total sits at 9. And then Colorado, who you pointed out, your numbers were pretty much spot on last year. They ended up with 4 wins. Win total now sitting at 5.5. Those two teams could not be more opposite about how they go about business, right? Clemson is, we recruit from high school. That's how we're going to roll. Colorado's turning that thing over very, very rapidly. So those two teams to wrap here, Clemson and Colorado, your expectations on those two squads?
Yeah, Clemson 9 feels about right. Of course, once again, no value, 9.1 wins with SP+. Clemson frustrates me, and I mentioned this on the Game Day podcast yesterday too, but Clemson frustrates me because you don't even have to change much. It's not like anybody's telling Dabo to go start signing 30 transfers a year. He relies on solid, top 10-ish, 15-ish level recruiting, player development, culture, all these things that should and do still absolutely matter. But against all the other teams that are recruiting at that kind of level, all these other teams are at least trying to plug 3, 4, 5 holes with portal guys. And I think that's holding them back right now. If you just identify the 3 or 4 or 5 biggest problems that Clemson had last year or that the roster has coming into this year, which I guess is what, like defensive back, I guess could use a little bit more. They relied on 2 freshmen last year who might be good, but they're still just sophomores. Defensive line, it's hard to question too much there. They've got a lot of sophomores and juniors, but they're well touted. But they could always use more help on the offensive line. They could use another receiver, especially since the one guy who made any sort of big play contributions last year was Bo Collins, and he's gone. So go out and sign like two transfer receivers and a transfer safety or something, you know, like you don't have to do much, but it is what it is. And they're probably just going to be a top 15 team because of it, but they're a top 15 team still. Klubnik is still good. Phil Moffa is still good. They have efficiency options, even if they don't make many big plays. Like, this is a solid roster. And I think 9 wins is about right. There is massive disagreement with SP Plus and the number for Colorado, though. Colorado's only at 3.8. They're still only projected 69th overall because they were only 81st last year, and their schedule features a whole lot of teams that no elite teams, no top 10 teams, but they get, you know, Kansas State 17th, Arizona's 24th, Utah's 18th, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech is probably projected better. UCF is probably projected better. Nebraska might be projected better as well. And so there are just so many possible losses on the schedule. It's going to be, they're going to have to win all their close games, I think, to get to 6-7 wins. And I just looking at what Deion Sanders did with the roster this last year, I do think the starting lineup's going to be better. You know, Deion Hayes from Pitt, getting him at defensive end. I think he actually signed good linemen this time, which he didn't really do last year. He was signing other people's backups last year. But the Myers kid from UTEP on the offensive line, there are just some good names in there. And I think their starting lineup will be better, but he chased off like 30, 40 more guys, and he still doesn't have a second string. And so they should be, maybe they're in position to overachieve projections in September, but once all those hard teams hit in October and November, they're going to be on second stringers, and they're not going to be any better than they were last year, I don't think. So they better win early is kind of the main thing there. And they have a chance to start 3-1, 4-0, but they better do it because there are a lot of losses back half of that schedule.
Yeah, the Nebraska game is going to be fascinating week two. North Dakota State, heck, week one.
Yeah.
Against North Dakota State, the FCS power. What's your rating right now on North Dakota State? I'm curious because you do FCS, right?
I do FCS, but right now I don't really have any sort of returning production aspect or any sort of, like, you know, market-based aspect until August. But I will say North Dakota State has slipped the last 2 years, yeah, and now they have another coaching change. So I don't trust that they're the North Dakota State that we all got used to always beating FBS teams a few years ago. They're still going to be good, obviously. And they're still, what I just said about Colorado being improved in the trenches, we will absolutely know if they're improved in the trenches after facing North Dakota State. They're always good at that. I think Colorado, everybody's been dogpiling there and saying North Dakota State's going to win that game. I would enjoy it, but I'm not sure they do. I'm not sure they're as good as they were a few years ago.
Yeah, it's worth noting only 4 FCS teams beat FBS teams straight up last year. So has not really been a fruitful endeavor, to say the least.
Yeah, James Madison moved, like a couple of them moved up, and nobody wants to play North Dakota State or South Dakota State for the most part. So yeah, you're not facing the best FCS team. This one's unique in that regard, but still.
Hey, Bill, great stuff, man. Big fan of your work, and I'm sure all our listeners will be reading everything that you put out as the year goes on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks to Bill Conley. Great stuff there. I put him on the spot on a couple of questions, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that. I enjoy his work, and, you know, once again, it is a situation, I think majority of you understand this, no one particular handicapping route is an exact science, but I use Bill SP Plus a lot as kind of a tool to compare, and his numbers, it seemed like, you know, for him, and obviously as a bettor, you want to be off market on a couple things so you can find an advantage there and go ahead and bet those particular spots. But it was interesting to note that a lot of his win total projections were pretty much on market. Colorado being interesting, way off market there at 3.8 versus 5.5, which is where the market sits at. Will they get the bowl eligibility? That said, we had Max Olson on 2 weeks ago, and he covers the portal very closely. And even though he got a bunch of heat from Colorado for the article that he wrote, he believes they will be a bowl team this upcoming year. So Colorado, no doubt, will be a very intriguing team. Thursday night to start the year against North Dakota State. They are around a touchdown favorite in that one. And then When you look at some of their other games, they are an underdog at Nebraska. Right now, I believe that line, let me double check that. Yeah, they're 6.5-point underdog in that one. And then they're an 8-point favorite against Colorado State out of the chute there. But their Big 12 schedule is not easy, no doubt. They play Utah. They play Kansas State. So they have a challenging schedule there. Colorado does as the year goes on. So just pulling up the schedule real quickly for Colorado. So, you know, you got Utah. They actually don't have, they have Kansas State. They go to UCF. So pretty challenging schedule to say the least there for Colorado. So 5.5 is where their win total is at. And Brad Powers being the guy that he is, I think he said he found a rogue 6.5 and a rogue 4.5. And he was, as his common answer was last week, you know what I bet. The Florida one, I just, you know, I keep staring at the 5 there at Circa, and it is, you know, -120 to the under. And I look at that schedule for Florida and I keep asking myself, are they more likely to go 4-8 or 6-6? And then you also wonder too, I mean, look, glass half full for Florida. And as, you know, Bill pointed out, they are power rated in his top 30. But I thought the stat that he said regarding this schedule that Florida is facing, an average top 5 team would win 9 games against this Florida schedule. I mean, that is absolutely brutal. They do have an exciting young quarterback that they could turn to in DJ Lagway, who was, you know, a highly touted 5-star recruit, I believe. But you open up against Miami, where you're a pick'em. You got Samford, Texas A&M at home. Texas A&M, a team that Bill is pretty high on, kind of felt like a boomer bust team. And then you go to Stark Vegas, the month of September, glass half full. Could they be 4-0? I guess. But do you believe that they will be 4-0? Then you have UCF off a bye, and then it's at Tennessee, home to Kentucky, versus Georgia, Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, at Florida State. That back end of the schedule is just absolutely brutal. So Florida's certainly a team that, well, 5 wins would probably lead to the firing of Billy Napier in year 3, a.k.a. Sunbelt Billy. No, I do think that, yeah, it is, it's going to be quite the challenge to get there. All right, I mentioned something that I was flipping through schedules, and you know me, I love my scheduling spots, and I want to give you 2 random scheduling spots to close out the podcast here. This is kind of a sicko college football in late May, but Memphis is a team in the AAC that, from a talent perspective, might be the best group of 5 team out there. You know, just looking at Bill Conley, who we just talked to, obviously, he has them rated 39th, which is 1 spot behind Boise State. And those are the first 2 G5 teams that you see. So Memphis is a team, folks, that brings back a lot. We talked about them a little bit with Brad Powers last week, where Memphis is definitely going to be a team that is going to be in the discussion for a group of 5, that group of 5 bid. And can they win the American Athletic Conference, especially with, you know, that conference getting a little bit weaker with SMU departing. The thing about their schedule that intrigues me is this. So week 3, their Super Bowl is at Florida State. You've got obviously the ties there with Memphis and Florida State, being that Mike Norvell came to Florida State from Memphis. And then the fact that Florida State's going to be probably a top 10 team when they play each other that week. So it's going to be a huge game. We don't have the game time yet. It probably will come out after this podcast drops, but there's a chance that's a, you know, a primetime game. It's going to be a big game. And then the following week, Memphis has to go on the road to Navy. And you know it's never fun to play Navy. Last year, they played Navy on a Thursday night. They won the game, did not cover. And for someone who loves situational spots, Navy will be coming off a bye. They'll get a chance to play the best team in the conference, a team that they've had success against at least a year ago from a covering standpoint. So scheduling spot du jour, Navy, week four against Memphis. Navy off a bye, Memphis coming off of a road tilt against Florida State. Scheduling spot number two in the American Athletic Conference, and I promise this is why I held it to the end, because it is super obscure and way out there. But how about the Tulane Green Wave? Got a new head coach. John Summerall comes in from Troy as Willie Fritz and his success walks out the door. Ty Thompson, the Oregon former Oregon quarterback, likely the starter there at Tulane. But the reason I bring this one up, another week four game. Tulane plays Kansas State in week two. Remember, 2 years ago, Tulane went to Manhattan and beat Kansas State and route two, reaching the Cotton Bowl where they would beat USC. That was their huge win. They ended up winning the AAC that year. The only loss they had was to Southern Miss, a non-conference game. So Tulane coming off of another undefeated regular season in conference play. They go home to Kansas State, which will be a huge spot for them. Last year, they played Ole Miss at home. It did not work out well, but they had injuries there on the Tulane side. And that was a cover, by the way, for anyone who was on that game. And then they go to Oklahoma. So you've got Kansas State at Oklahoma for the Green Wave, new era there. And then what do you have waiting for you in week four? A road trip to Lafayette to take on Louisiana. And Louisiana, who will be coming off a bye, will have played Grambling, and newbie to the FBS, Kennesaw State, will get to host Tulane. So you're talking about a Tulane team that will go Kansas State, at Oklahoma, at Louisiana, and the Ragin' Cajuns will have had a bye week after starting against Grambling and Kennesaw State. So there you go. I promised you some obscure scheduling spots, and I found them, and I'll find more as the summer goes. But week four, Navy at home against Memphis. What number are we going to get? We can get double digits on that one. I should have asked Bill what his raw number was going to be on that one. And then Louisiana at home against Tulane. So there you go. No better way to wrap up the podcast than some obscurity scheduling situational spots here at the end of May. Keep the comments coming. Love them. At one Tim Murray is where you can find me on Twitter. Let's keep the momentum rolling here all throughout the postseason as I continue to try to get some really good guests on the podcast as we get you all ready for the upcoming college football season, which less than, I think, 85 days away right now. And we're getting game times out. So it's a fun time right now for you college football fans. So please rate, review, and subscribe. Let some folks know, hey, build these up and, listen to them while you're sitting on the beach or taking a road trip this summer, whatever it may be. But please hit that rate and review. Give us 5 stars and hopefully this summer I'm working, no promises, but working on maybe some sort of giveaways, but that's still in the works here. But give us that 5-star review and just a short, quick 1 or 2 sentences on iTunes or Spotify. All right, that's going to do it for this podcast. Thanks to Bill Conley again for jumping on the podcast at @ESPN_BillC. Thanks to producer Steven. I am Tim Murray. We'll be back next week with another VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.